Don't turn around. What do you want?
I want to get on the same page.
I stayed away from you for years. For a reason.
Well, you need to shelve that shit.
Shit? Melting people's faces with irons. Coercing women into marrying you, slaughtering my people. That shit I have not forgotten. Nobody has.
No, well, just so you know, I haven't forgotten either. And for the shit I've done, I probably deserve to be in a place like this. It fits.
Hey Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And this is The Walking Dead Cast, episode 487.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, season 11, episode 21, Outpost 22.
I was thinking it would have been cool if 500 was like the final. So that means we have to figure out how to do 13 episodes.
Yeah,
we'll
do 13 episodes of content in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, and they all have to be really good.
Yeah, they'll have to be high quality.
We will be doing a few extras because just to remind you guys, we're doing separate listener feedback episodes, you know, yep. For these final few episodes. I asked the Zedhead group if people like that and got almost all positive answers. I'm going to read a few just so you guys know what people said. Derek O'Neill said, I really enjoyed it. I like the idea of getting your thoughts and then discussing the feedback. I know for me, when I have a podcast with lots of feedback after we've talked all about the episode, it can feel repetitive. But if you get a breather between, it can feel more fresh. I agree with that.
Love you, Derek. That's great. Yeah.
I didn't even realize that was going to be a thing, but it was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Randy Stevenson says, I enjoyed it. It feels like you were refreshed and able to focus on the feedback.
Yeah, fair.
I assume this will give folks a little more time to gather their thoughts and submit something, which is a plus. There's a lot we all want to say with it being the last few episodes. It also means we get two episodes a week. That's totally true, too. I know I didn't really think about it, but sometimes by the time we get to the feedback, we're kind of pushing through it a little bit because we're like, we've already been talking for an hour.
Yeah. And we're both pretty drunk by that
point.
Yeah,
we're both pretty wasted by the time. Luckily, we can even read.
Right. It gets pretty rough. You should hear some of the outcuts. Not good.
I usually throw up at least once.
Yeah, it's gross. I'm crying. It's awful. It's really bad.
And Anwen says, I love it. Listen to it this morning. I would much rather you keep it and allow everyone to send in their thoughts about the season and the podcast without having to cut it. I absolutely loved hearing the first time messages from longtime listeners. Keep it for the season. So yeah, if we can have more of you guys who've never written in before, or like I said last time, I love when people are writing in just about their overall thoughts about the show and the podcast. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into this week's episode, Walking Dead season 11 episode 21, Outpost 22. What did you think?
Yeah, it was fine. I think I'm sharing the feeling that a lot of people are having of like, oh shit, we're really near the end and stuff is still not happening. And I'm stressed out about that a little bit. I thought there were some, it was a hard one to write notes on because a lot of it was actually action sequences with not a lot of dialogue. So I'm worried that my notes are not great this episode because like when I was when I was rewatching the train scene, I was just like, yeah, this is great. No notes. Yeah, this is fun.
I mean,
yeah, cool.
I'm kind of the same too, because it was action. It was an action-y episode, and I was feeling kind of impatient with that. Like, Walking Dead action is not as good as like what we get now. Like, my favorite action movie is Mad Max: Fury Road.
Oh yeah,
that's incredible. That's a great one. I can watch that if I want to see action.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So when you do sort of action light, but then I guess, so on second watch, I appreciated the action more. And I think that happens to me sometimes where I appreciate something the second time is because the first time I'm just thinking, I don't want this. And so then I'm not appreciating it. But then when I go into it knowing that it's there and there's nothing I can do to change that, then I can really kind of dig in and go, okay, yeah, this is actually kind of tense and good. So yeah. I liked this episode more on second watch. And then there was some stuff that happened at the end that I thought was really interesting and good.
There were moments where it really picked up, which I enjoyed. And it was nice to see, yeah, some characters interact who haven't really interacted with one another and who we've not seen in a while. So I enjoyed that part of it as well.
Yeah, I ended up, I'm on first watch, I thought, pretty good. And on second watch, I was like, no, that was a good one. And I'm really stoked to see what happens next. So I liked it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Can I go first this time?
Absolutely.
Okay. My first point is Negan.
Okay, everyone, if you pause and just skip to the next chapter.
No, no, come we'll on. This is the culmination, sort of.
This is it. This is it. Ezekiel. Yeah,
so, but first, Negan. So they're all captives and they're in a shitty position. And Negan asks this soldier, like, oh, excuse me, sir, my wife is over at the other, can you and the guy's just like whacked him in the face with the metal bar. And you know, that was pretty harsh. Like, I'm not always a fan of Negan, but no. Oh, sorry, I accidentally pressed the, I thought that was hilarious because Negan, no, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to see anyone get hit in the face, but I do think it's interesting to see Negan on the other end of being terrorized like this. It made me think, you know, in everything that we've seen with him since he became a main character and not the villain, we haven't seen him have to face something like this, that he, that's sort of similar to what he did to other people.
Yeah.
So I think it's really fascinating to see how he handles it. And I think it could possibly further his growth to, because it's very similar to something that, I don't want to give away too much, but something that's happening on Handmaid's Tale right now. Ooh. And when the tables are turned, that's what it takes sometimes for people to have empathy for the people that they've hurt, you know? I mean, I think the best kind of person can have empathy without having to be in the other person's position, but not all of us can do that all the time. And so I think this could be really interesting to see if Negan's like, oh, this is how I made you feel? Okay, now I'm really sorry, you know, or something like that.
Well, there's just some interesting things with, like, the jerk on the bus being like, you have no names and this is your salvation. And I was like, oh, this is a bit familiar from, you know, Saviors and
Everyone's
You Are All
Negan.
Negan.
Yeah, totally.
There were bits of it I could have, you know, I am a father to be like, we fucking get it. know, we know that it's like, fine. You know who else was a father to be? I'm not even going to say it. Anyway, yeah.
So Negan goes over and sits next to Ezekiel and says, don't turn around. And my first thought was, oh, I don't remember having seen them talked much since all the shit went down with Negan.
Ever.
And then I was like, oh, and Ezekiel probably hates Negan more than most, you know, other people have had time to get used to him or whatever, or even experienced him being a hero, saving people and stuff. But Ezekiel, the Saviors killed most of his people, which is why he's not a king anymore. And it sent him into a depression. And they were the reason indirectly why Shiva died. And so he's got a lot of reasons not to like Negan at all. But Negan wants to work together to get out of there. Ezekiel's like, I stayed away from you for years for a reason. And Negan says, well, you need to shelf that shit, which I loved.
I felt like he was talking to us. I was like, he looks directly into the camera and is like, yeah, Lucy, you need to shelf that shit. I'm like, all right.
I mean, I don't, I think there's a time and a place. And this is not it, right? He's got a total point. We need to work together to get out of here. Absolutely. Yep. I fully agree with Negan. But Ezekiel's like, melting people's faces with irons, coercing women into marrying you, slaughtering my people, that shit I've not forgotten. Nobody has. And I'm just like, thanks, Angela, for, I wrote her an email last week and I was like, can you please put this in the show?
We've written some dialogue. It's baller.
I mean, no one's surprised to know. I'm glad they touched on this. We thought the show was maybe whitewashing it. You know, that was our complaint a couple of weeks ago. So I'm very, very thankful that they mentioned it and, and that it's not forgotten. And that means a lot to me.
Yes. Accountability.
Yeah. Even if like Negan doesn't take accountability, just that the show acknowledges that that happened and that that means a lot. That ups my respect level for The Walking Dead, which was already really high, but even more.
Completely agree.
Yeah. So then Negan says, yeah, well, just so you know, I haven't forgotten either. And for the shit I've done, I probably deserve to be in a place like this. And someone had asked in the comments, I hadn't seen the episode yet, but they're like, does this conversation with Negan count as, I mean, with Ezekiel count as Negan having, you know, come forward and asking for penance or whatever? No, not at all. Because, well, maybe a little, but he's trying to get something from Ezekiel for one. And he says the very like littlest amount, like, I haven't forgotten. Well, that doesn't say he's taking responsibility for it or that that he's sorry. He says he probably deserves to be in a place like this. Like, maybe, maybe not, you know.
Maybe not. I mean, could be fine. Yeah. Like, no.
So, I mean, it is something. He's at least acknowledging it. And if he is at all being truthful, then maybe he there is some realization there. But for me, he still has a ways to go. And I think that's by design. I think his character, they want to give the character somewhere to go. And hopefully there'll be more on it in the spinoff where he'll really take responsibility and show some understanding for what he did. But I think that happened like 10% here for me.
I think like for a character to be interesting, you have to have an arc that is resolved in some way. And what our problem with Negan has been, speaking as a unit, is they haven't had the arc. It's just gone from villain to hero, and there's been nothing
like
in
that,
the middle.
Yeah,
nothing in the middle of like, oh, by the way, remember all that really bad shit I did? Yeah, I remember that. It's been more like, hey, let's just forget about that. And this, I think, really helped because it fleshes that out a bit.
Yeah, you like me now, right? I'm cool.
I'm cool. Look, I'm nice with kids. That's so nice.
And he clearly has changed in a lot of ways. He's not killing any more good people with this bat or anything. He's helping people. So yes, he's changed, but just this particular thing with the women is what gets me that they haven't really acknowledged that until now. So I love that.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, yeah, he hasn't killed people, you know, go him, but also like, he hasn't had the chance, has he? He's not been king of his own castle for a while.
That's true. You don't know whether someone's truly reformed, and I've said this in Handmaid's Tale too, until they have power again and you see what they do with that power.
I think the closest we came is when he kind of gets Lucille back, and that was almost directly from the comics, as he gets the bat back and sort of contemplates using it. This is when he's in exile. I can't remember where it fell in the show. I think after the Whisperers.
When
and
he
that's
escaped,
when you kind of, yeah, when, when he, no.
No, when he was
sent out
to
his. Did they do it when he
escaped,
or is it when Carol sends him away?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, my memory
I think
is
it was
so
when
bad.
Carol sent him away.
Yeah, and the idea is like, he finds his leather jacket and his bat, and he's like, great, but then it realizes his heart's not in it. And to me, that was the closest he's come to like, redemption is that moment, because he has the opportunity to follow that through.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, because he realizes he's better off with other people. But even then, that's survival instinct, isn't it? So I don't know, but I agree with you that this episode, it was really good that they had that scene. I thought Carrie Payton was amazing, because I feel like everyone around us in the show and in the fan base has lost any fury that they had because it's been so long. Whereas to see someone still be like raging at him was amazing. I was like, oh yes.
Dude, and Carrie Payton's like that too. I've seen him at conventions. I mean, it's been a few years now, but as recent ago as like late 2019, he was saying, yeah, fuck that guy. Like backstage, he'd say that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they, as I understand it from the show, the saviors had been hanging over the kingdom for a lot longer. It had been years, right? Like it wasn't like, oh, the saviors have just recently come along. It was like, here's how the system is and how we do. And they had, you know, my favorite savior, the grumpy admin dude, whose name I don't remember, who just seemed to really not be that into it and just wanted a quiet life. He was the one who always got sent to like pick up the stuff. And yeah, people are like, oh, but it was Jared that killed Ben and stuff. I'm like, I don't fucking care. He was a savior. Like, who told him to do that? You know, it was their way of doing it.
I mean, we saw Negan do enough stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. But this, as you say, is a step forward.
It is. It is. And also he has, I maybe I'm repeating this too much, but Negan clearly has come a long way. I would say a long way from where he was. He's been helping people, and, you know, to the point where Maggie trusted him with Herschel. And I think probably, I don't blame her for that. I didn't think, what are you trusting Negan for? No, he's shown that he can be trusted, even though then he just left him with Elijah.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, even though, like, does anyone know where Herschel is right now? Oh,
yeah, he's fine, I'm sure.
Kind of on Maggie, though.
But then another thing, well, no, let me do this one. So I think Ezekiel mentioning the stuff about coercion of women mm-hmm. and ironing faces, that was a little, like, would Ezekiel really be, I mean, Negan killed all his people, or at least the saviors did, and led to the death of his tiger. I feel like he'd be more focused on that. I think the coercion and ironing faces line, it did feel a little bit more like for people like us who care about that.
Yeah, I think so. But also, like, Ezekiel's a lover, not fighter, isn't he? And yeah, I think maybe he also, right. You know, he was married to a woman who is domestically abused for a long time. So he probably has some strong feelings
true.
About that.
Very good point.
Even though Carol seems oddly fine with Negan a lot of the time. But, you know, he probably learned about Carol's experience and things through that. Yeah.
Carol wouldn't take any shit from him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know? So I think... I can it felt a bit nod and wink to the audience,
yeah,
but I was pleased that someone said it, and I can buy that Ezekiel, who's quite a noble character,
would care.
Yeah
Okay, I agree with you. I did kind of love that Negan recognizes, okay, these people rule by fear like I did, mm-hmm. but you need power to do that. We can't do that. You got to be holding the gun. And what we need is hope. And I'm no good at that, but you are, Ezekiel. That all felt, it was a little bit like paint by numbers or something, but I thought it was kind of neat that he recognized all of that. And pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. It was a nice moment, I think. And the idea of people being forced to work together in these situations is always a really interesting dynamic.
Sure.
And to have that fresh reminder of everything was really, really powerful. Ezekiel's also looking out for Kelly, which is really sweet, because Kelly's just, there's something really vulnerable about Kelly, even though she's a badass. And I love that element of Ezekiel kind of looking out and caring for people.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Don't run.
Yeah. Don't do that.
And then three people get shot, and that was chilling as fuck. Like,
I'm not saying I told you so, but I'm also saying I told you so.
See?
I like that he said, I'm with you for now. I like that it was conditional. Oh, yeah. It wasn't like, all is forgiven. It was like, no, actually, for the moment, I'm with you.
It's kind of like me with Negan. I'm with you for now.
Yeah. And I'll say, I say this a lot, but I just wish we didn't know there was a spinoff, because if I was watching I'd be like, oh, we're getting teed up for a Negan death. Great. Perfect end to the cycle. Like, perfect end to his character. Go out a hero. Like Gabriel says elsewhere in the episode, people remember the last thing you do. And to me, that was always the logical thing for Negan, wasn't it? It was like, do something good. But
yeah, because Ezekiel says they need a spark to wake hope up in people. And that gives Negan some idea. I can arrange that, but I doubt I'll be getting out of here. So clearly he's going to sacrifice himself in some act that he thinks will give hope to the others. And yeah, I think that's this, whatever this is probably exactly why JDM was mad that the Negan Maggie series was announced early. He was frustrated with that. And it's because we're being set up to fear that Negan's going to die here, just like you just said.
Whereas this, you're just like, oh, okay, so that's happening, and then, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's setting up for something bigger in the spin-offs, but I think it would do a disservice to the show to not, I don't know, to not have some kind of resolution to Negan's storyline within the show, but that's clearly not what we're heading for. But this episode did patch some of it up for me, so I was glad of that.
Yeah, and I think... I suspect that even with the people moving on to spinoffs, they'll try to make it feel like some kind of an ending somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, Ian, I hope
and
so.
Daryl and yeah.
I really, really hope so. Fingers crossed.
Okay, what's the next point?
There were a couple of really nice two-hander scenes in this, but my favorite was probably between Maggie and Carol, because Carol got to be a mum. And that was really sweet, because we've not seen maternal Carol in a while. And You hardly ever see Maggie be vulnerable with anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
But knowing the history the two of them have, I was thinking a lot about that episode at the start of the Savior arc where the two of them are being kept hostage by Alicia Witt and some other female saviors. And I was thinking about, you know, all the things they've gone through and how they've known each other now since season two. And Maggie being able to break down about Herschel in front of Carol, I think was really, really important for her and important for their characters.
It was kind of sweet too.
Oh, it was so sweet. And Carol was just really there for her. And again, I felt the dialogue was a little bit hokey because it was like, in the old world, I never would have spoken to you. After the fall, we were forced to become a family. But I kind of, I'll forgive it because they were both great in that scene.
Dialogue could have been better in this whole episode, I feel like.
Yeah, who wrote it? I don't want to point a finger, but yeah. I feel like the dialogue could have been a little better. I loved that she did the thing that, like, I remember when you're a kid and your parent kind of leads you to make your own conclusion that's comforting. I just thought that was so neat when she says, you know, and what did Pamela do? And Maggie's like, she split us up. And she's like, why? And it's like, because she's scared of us. And it's this really powerful thing of like, yeah, she did split you up because she's scared of you. And they just played it really wonderfully because Maggie's so... I think Maggie and Rosita in this episode are really struggling because their kids have been taken and they can't think of anything else. Like, you see Rosita nearly
Daryl get bitten. Too.
Yeah, and Daryl as well. It was quite funny when they took my kids. Peter's like, well, would we call them your kids? I'm like, shut up, they're his kids.
I think they're more his kids than anyone's. That's what I think.
I know. I think when if/when Rick and Michonne come back, Judith might be like, no, I'm good. But yeah, that Maggie Carol moment was wonderful. And I thought Lauren Cohen in this episode generally was fantastic. The kill with the baby boys, I mean, he's not a baby, but like the kid Zed was so upsetting but oddly sweet. Like, I don't know, it was a really weird scene. It was just very well shot, and Maggie just holding him that way and killing him and just sort of looking at him, I just thought that was a really incredible moment, very powerful. He looked a lot like Joffrey at the Purple Wedding though. I was like, this little kid actor looks really like Jack Gleason.
It was kind of a tender moment.
Yeah. Did she say, I'm sorry, or it's all right?
I'm sorry.
That's what I'm sorry. Yeah.
For me, so they're doing these flashbacks of Herschel being taken, and it makes, you know, this little kid zombie makes her think of Herschel. She doesn't have the heart to kill it. And this is probably just a me thing, but I'm just like, I always think killing a Zed is a kindness. They are not happy. They're suffering, it seems like, right? Either they're suffering or they don't feel anything. So, but they may be suffering. And in my opinion, leaving him to go off was kind of a weakness on her part. Like, put this poor thing out of its misery. So that, way that I think about it sort of colored my feelings about all of that.
I do actually agree with you on that. And I think it's a sign of how unsettled she was that she didn't. I think that's the thing, like with Rosita not noticing that Zed was coming out of the woods towards her, I was like, they're just not thinking straight.
That's ridiculous. Come on, you're out in the open. All of a sudden, there's a zombie right on you.
Well, Jason, the next time you've been drugged, had your children taken away and woken up in a van and then by the side of the road, let's see how you do.
All right,
we'll
try that out.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll come to San Francisco, we'll be doing an experiment. Yeah, so I enjoyed the Maggie Carol scene very much. I thought their interaction was really, really powerful in this episode, and I like seeing the two of them together. There's something really satisfying about seeing some of the longest serving characters hanging out, even though I'm quite partial to some of the new ones. It felt very homely and well deserved.
So a couple of extracurricular sort of workshop activities that we'll be having at the Walking Dead finale weekend are, I'm going to be forced to, I'm going to have my kids kidnapped and then I'm going to be forced and drugged and then see if I can deal with zombies. And then on day two, we'll have Lucy knifing people in the head class.
Yeah, just to see. it's just a quick experiment.
Live podcast.
I finished my first D&D campaign at the weekend, and I took inspiration from our joke about Lance Hornsby smashing Sebastian's head in and then peeing on him. And I'll have you know, I killed 3 villains by punching them to death and then peeing on them. So don't let anyone tell you that podcasting doesn't pay off in real/D&D life.
What's your character's name?
My character's name was Hilda. Nice. And yeah, she was a rock gnome monk. And she liked to punch things. And piss on them. And piss on them afterwards. Yeah, yeah. I have to say the DM didn't give me any points for like innovation. I was quite upset.
Oh, so, that's too bad.
I know.
You need a better DM.
I do.
So let me see what I had about that. Maggie's upset. Herschel's gone and says, I hate not knowing. And I thought, my first thought was, I bet the kids are fine because it's the Commonwealth and they're probably at some comfortable facility like a daycare.
They're probably at Montessori school in the Commonwealth. Yeah,
that's what I thought. But then I started thinking, and I hope people will forgive me for talking about real world stuff, but this seems very much like what happened at the U.S. border where kids were being separated from their parents. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And they were kept in these crappy facilities, you know, in cages, mm-hmm. as they say. And some of those kids still have yet to be reunited with their parents, by the way. So you never know what where those kids are. They may just be in some like cement floor facility with nothing to occupy them.
Or Montessori school.
We just don't know. Yeah. But it all sucks for Maggie, especially because she never even trusted the Commonwealth. And that got me thinking, wait, how did Maggie even end up here? Where did we see her last? So I was thinking about it. She killed Leah, and then they were reunited, Daryl and Maggie, with Gabriel and Aaron, and Negan and Annie showed up and said Herschel was safe with Elijah and sent Negan into the Commonwealth. And then Maggie was there with them when Carol came out and said, okay, Pamela has this deal to give all our community supplies and leave us alone if we say Lance did all the things that Sebastian actually did. And then Maggie was also there when, she hasn't, you know, been in the last few episodes that much, but she was also there when Aaron left for Oceanside, you know, with Jerry and Lydia. But I don't know where Maggie, where her home base was this whole time, because we saw the Commonwealth had taken over Hilltop and Alexandria. You know, I don't know where Maggie was living this whole time. And so that makes me wonder, well, how did they get her and take Herschel away from her?
So
we just don't know.
Maggie left Hilltop. So, okay, right. Here we go. Maggie left Hilltop because Negan sent for her from the cult apartment block.
Yeah.
She left with, I want to say Elijah. There may have been someone else there, and I don't remember. Possibly Lydia. Herschel hid in the back of the van. They got to the apartment block. Then all the shit blew up there. Negan and Annie took Herschel to... No, because they go back to Hilltop because
all this stuff
in the ground under
before
Hilltop.
Before everything I just said. Because where I started was when Maggie killed Leah, right? And then she was with Daryl, and then they hooked up with Gabriel and
they fucked
Aaron.
Up Hilltop. Leah and her family fucked up Hilltop.
Burnt it down, yeah.
So they'd all... Hilltop.
But then
had been
after
evacuated.
That, we saw the Commonwealth flag come down on Hilltop.
So, Maggie just still doesn't know that.
Yeah, but my point is, she's not living there. She's not living in Alexandria. She's not living in the Commonwealth. So we don't know where she's been living this whole time. And because of that, it's like, well, how did they grab her and take Herschel away from her?
I honestly think this whole time has been maybe 2 days.
Yeah, but still, is she just out on the road? And
I reckon she was in Travelodge at the Airbnb at the Commonwealth because they were going to leave the next day.
It's a bit of an untold story.
Yeah.
You know,
who knows
where she was, because she had no home base. So if she was camping, then how did they, because when they show them pulling Herschel away from her, it's kind of dark all around. You can't really tell what the setting is like. So I think they just didn't have time to tell that story.
Yeah, because I think they'd brokered the deal with Pamela and then everything went to shit and that's when they were all getting grabbed. So,
but I don't know where Maggie was when they brokered that, you know, when Carol went to tell everyone that that was the deal. Because I remember Maggie saying, yeah, I just don't want to fight anymore or something. You know, we all need to work together or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. Because they kind of, they're all kind of going to head off their separate ways and then everything goes to hell. But Maggie might have left already. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're just not going to know.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, when Aaron went to Oceanside, I don't remember. Maybe Maggie said what she was going to do at that point. Mm. Oh, I should have went back and looked at that. I can't remember. Anyway, we're spending too much time on this. What's yeah. Let's go
into another point. So anyone who's still listening,
can I go now? Yeah, it's my turn.
Of course, right? Yeah.
So my next one is family back together.
Yeah,
you kind of said it was great to see a bunch of our characters together, working together in the outdoors like the old days. Mm-hmm. Carol, Daryl, Maggie, Gabriel, Rosita, and Connie, and even in the labor camp, Ezekiel, Kelly, and Negan. I didn't know how much I missed seeing them all together until this episode, and it was a nice feeling. And I think the voiceover had something to do with this, not so much the content, but what they were choosing to show. So Judas says, "The only thing I've ever known is to fight." And you see Rick, Lori, Herschel, Maggie, Glenn, Beth, and T-Dog.
All the OGs.
Yeah, all the OGs back at the prison running. She says, "There's so much we've done." And then you see a bunch of our heroes in this barn holding the door so the walkers can't in. I think that was the episode just before they met Aaron when there was a big storm.
Yeah, that was like the lowest ebb at that point, wasn't it?
Had no home. She goes, so much more to do. And then you see, well, then you just see Maggie by herself actually at the beginning of the season when she's going back to her place to get supplies and all that stuff that we don't care about happened. She says, but I want to believe there's hope. And then we see Rosita, Carl, Michonne, Tara, and Rick arriving at Hilltop, and Maggie's waiting and hugs Rick. Mm-hmm. And she goes, that together there's hope, isn't there? So I think the point was to show a lot of people together.
Yeah.
It's about the family of it all.
Those moments of reunion.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a theme of hope, which Negan and Ezekiel's conversation touches on. But here, when Carol's talking to Maggie, she says, you know, I barely saw Daryl when I got my new job at the Commonwealth. I barely saw anyone, just doing our own thing. It was like the old world. And I was like, yeah, that's how I feel. I was just thinking about that yesterday. I used to hang out with my friends all the time, and now I barely see any of my friends because I'm busy with my family and my work and my, you know, that's basically it. My kids, my family, my work. But, I miss it.
Yeah.
You know, I miss it.
Do you feel it's changed like since the pandemic as well? Do you feel do less now? No?
No. I mean, I thought you meant since the pandemic has let up, because absolutely. It feels like, yeah, just being an adult. But I think it's interesting because there is some truth about, I hadn't really thought about it, but our society is set up in that way too. It's a rat race, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a pep talk from Carol. She's like, they had to come at us when we were separated. What does that say? Mm-hmm. Maggie, well, that we scared the shit out of them. Exactly. And then Gabriel and Rosita show up and there's hugs all around. And it's really nice to see them together. A lot of viewers and listeners have been missing seeing them together. Mm-hmm. And I love how they take a story element that viewers might be frustrated with, not having our people together. Yeah. And they weave it into this theme, the pros and cons of modern civilization. Mm. And so it also, like, drama is about tension and uncomfortableness and then a relief or a release from that. So the tension of not having our people together for so long feels uncomfortable. And then we get to feel good in this episode when they reunite, but you don't get that good feeling without the uncomfortableness first. And people think they don't want any of the uncomfortableness, but the show would be boring if it was all just nice. I mean, Great British Bake Off is pretty awesome, but they have tension in that too.
It's pretty tense.
It is, actually. They're like, well, they finished in time. But anyways, like, I think the trick is in figuring out the ratio or the timing of the uncomfortableness to the relief. Like season 7 and 8 of The Walking Dead was too uncomfortable for too long. And people were like, okay, I'm done. I need some our heroes to win a little bit here. It's too much, you know? And I think maybe this episode's with the Commonwealth, they probably went on too long with that too. You know, even I feel that way, even though I love the Commonwealth story of having it, our characters apart for so long or whatever. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. What do you think?
I haven't been finding the Commonwealth that bad. I think if anything, it's quite neutral. Like nobody's, yeah. I think I definitely found the 7 and 8 much harder when it was just endless.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
Relentless, like low stakes for our characters, just no hope. With the Commonwealth, I think there's been enough twisting and turning.
But it feels good this episode, right? To have be more like old times.
It was nice to not have the Commonwealth for a bit and to remember that our group can exist outside of it. I thought that was really important. And I think the perfect balance is always like the Terminus episode was just a perfect balance of it because it was super high, super scary stakes and then an amazing emotional payoff of reunion at the end. That's just like a masterclass.
Because I asked on our Facebook group a couple days ago, what's your favorite episode of The Walking Dead? And someone said, Season 5, Episode 1, and that's when that happens, what you just said. And I was like, oh my God, that's mine too. What a coincidence. And then like 3 more people picked that episode. I'm like, okay, I guess that's just a damn good episode.
It's the best one. Like anytime I'm like, I just want a quick Walking Dead hit, I will watch that episode because it's just so great. Like it has everything. You know, it leaves in a good place and just wonderful episode. And I think that's the balance because it goes pretty dark, it goes pretty hard and horrible, like
the baseball bat over the trough. That's awful. One of the most tense scenes ever in The Walking Dead.
In some ways it's worse than the lineup because it's like it's just happening and it's, you know, oh my God, it's just, and it's, there's something so methodical about it.
You hear that conk and then you look, how many people until we get to someone we care about?
You're just like shit, and you're like, oh no. And it's Sam, what's his face, that we've met in a previous episode as
Robin
well? Robin Lloyd Taylor, that's the one. Yeah, so I think 7 and 8 were mistakes in terms of the balance. And I think they've now got so much in the air that the balance is harder to achieve because you've got the Commonwealth storyline, which is kind of doing political thriller. And then around it, you're trying to introduce the variants and also give a satisfying conclusion to this whole series. And I think they're all in all doing a pretty good job. They're never going to please everyone.
Right.
But I think what you say is right. There needs to be that kind of coming together at the end of reuniting people and feeling like a team. If only they would take, you know, the guy that it all started with and maybe reunite him into the mix. That would just be great, wouldn't it?
They keep showing him in these opening scenes and I'm like, are they showing this to like hint that he's coming back at the end, or are they like, here's Rick, you wanted Rick, here he is,
flashback footage. You just see a flash of him like in Love Actually. They're like, we couldn't get him in for any new stuff, so we're just gonna use the Love Actually scenes, and we're like, huh,
holding up signs.
We're like, I guess it'll do.
That would be pretty funny. To me, you're perfect.
Can you imagine him and Negan? To me, you're perfect, Negan. Like, what the fuck?
Okay, what's next?
For me, probably a fairly short one, but I really liked the reveal of Alexandria at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Annoyingly, I'd been spoiled. I've had to remove myself from some situations in which I keep getting spoiled. So it's the fucking early drops, man. Early drops. It's annoying. Anyway, I thought
I was not spoiled, and I thought it was so great. Oh my god.
Oh, Peter loved it. He was like, that's so cool. And just the way they had the scenes cutting, and you could see Negan and Ezekiel start to realize that they knew where they were. And Yvette Nicole Brown, amazing cameo from a massive Walking Dead fan, which
I don't think
I loved.
Most listeners know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so the voice on the radio that Rosita is talking to is Yvette Nicole Brown, who most people probably know as, like, Shirley from Community.
Yeah, but she's also known as, like, the biggest Walking Dead fan. Like, I think
such
she
a big
was
Walking
on
Dead fan.
Talking Dead a lot and stuff.
Oh, my God. I would love it if she turned up in a cameo in the next one, but I thought that was a really brilliant cameo for her. And some very cheesy dialogue at the end as well of, we're going to shoot to kill.
Pretty talkative, too.
Yeah,
gives out a lot of
kill.
Information.
Godspeed, like, wow, it didn't take much to crack that nut. Yes, so having that whole kind of thing come together and to see Alexandria, it felt worse than when the saviors were like coming on the reg to pick up their supplies, like seeing it all stormtroopered. Did not like. So very interesting. But I mean, fucking idiots setting up in the home base of the people you're trying to oppress, who obviously know every little bit of that place inside and out and are going to completely fuck you up. That's all I'll say.
Probably. Yeah,
it's not going to go well for them.
I mean, counterpoint to that, and I think you're right, but just one little counterpoint is it's got to be pretty demoralizing to see your former home turned into that, you know?
Oh, yeah, terrible. Absolutely. I'd be pissed off.
You might lose heart. Some people might lose heart. Not our people, but some
people. Not our people. They're all cool.
Yeah. It's just going to galvanize them. Yeah, so my point is, it includes that, but it's forced labor. Mm. So the whole setup of them on these buses with the burlap sacks, kidnapped, conscripted into forced labor, it's pretty thrilling. I think it's one reason why I appreciated this episode more on second watch. I'm just like, yeah, that is pretty fucked up. And it seemed a little far out, but then I thought about it. No, the world has a long history of labor camps, the Nazis, mm-hmm. China does it now with the Uyghurs and probably other people. Yep. It's about labor and re-education, quote unquote. And it's one of the darker sides of developed civilization. Just another way of exploring that theme for The Walking Dead. We see who's on the bus as they remove their sacks. That was great. Just one by one. It's like, okay, it's Ezekiel. We need that. Oh, Negan's on here. Oh, wait, who's this? Oh, it's some random woman. Okay.
Whatever. Yeah, no, I really thought that was going to be a big reveal. I was like, oh, I don't know who that is.
Okay, she's probably going to die. All right.
Yeah, and oh, well, bye.
Annie and Kelly. And then this boss guy comes on. Now, this is another place where I thought the dialogue was, it's like, he says, good morning and welcome. Today's the first day of a new beginning. The world works when everyone knows their place. Your place is at the bottom. All the resources that we use to bring the old world back into the new and sustain it, it all starts at places like this. You should take comfort in knowing that good people will benefit from your labor here. That is your redemption. That is your salvation. To me, that just sounds like what I always complain about Fear of the Walking Dead, where it feels like the characters are walking around with cards on their, in their pockets that have a summary of who they are and they just read it out loud sometimes. It's like that, but with the situation, you know, like we need to infer a lot of that stuff. Nobody ever says that out loud. That's the part you don't say out loud, you know? That's what I
just like the idea that he's like a tour guide and has to do it every day. So he's like, welcome to Alexandria, here you will find your salvation. If you look to the left,
the bottom.
You go to the bottom, we're going to let you out of the back. Okay, you don't have names now. Bye.
Step this way.
He's done. He's like, but, I want my annual leave.
I like the guy though. He was good.
He was great. Yeah.
So then, you know, you get to see your children again if you play by the rules, he says. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, you get to look through a fence and see them through a hole in a fence?
Supervised visits? Like, what's happening?
I like they're not allowed to use names to sort of reinforce your former identities don't matter. Mm-hmm. You all are just nothing. And I think they separated Annie and Negan on purpose, probably.
Yes.
So that whole thing with Kelly, wanting to run, we've talked about like that they're eating this slop. It's probably oatmeal. I don't know.
It looks like very like porridge as we would have it in Scotland.
Yeah, I would eat that. Are you?
It wasn't the worst. I was like, oh, okay.
Fine. Put some cinnamon in there. Excuse me, sir. Can I get some cinnamon? Whack! Sorry. Are you watching Andor?
I haven't yet.
You should. It's very good. It's smart. It's
reviews
great.
Seem to have been very, very positive for it.
Yeah, it's a bit slow, but I think once you get into the flow of it. Anyway, this episode is a bit like Andor this week. Forced labor camp, eating something generic and unappetizing. So then I think the Outpost 22, we saw the forced labor. I think Outpost 22 may be the re-education part, quote unquote, because they're there for processing. Who knows what processing means, but just the way it was going, Rosita's talking to this woman. And meanwhile, we see on the bus, Ezekiel, Negan and Kelly pulling up to Outpost 22. Now, if you looked close, you could see it said Alexandria on the sign, but I didn't notice that at first. And then the dispatcher is saying that word is most of the processes used to live here before the Commonwealth claimed the territory and turned it into an outpost back when it was still called Alexandria. Dun, dun, dun.
Even though
we already saw the gates open, it really wasn't sinking into me that this was Alexandria until she said that. I'm slow sometimes, but whenever sometimes you realized it was like, for me, it was like, oh, wow, that's fucked up. Such a bummer. This once happy community is now this sinister place, and Lance set it up. He knew everything about it.
Yeah, my boy.
But the governor knows sure about did. It too. And because they mentioned the governor sent, you know, I think they did. Anyway,
interesting that we're hearing more of the governor and less Pamela and Milton now, which I like because it reminds us of the other governor, which is good.
Yeah. And out here, it's all brutal. Like, they all know. Like, back in town, no one knows that outside, if you mess up, you know you might die and all your family might die. No one in the Commonwealth knows that.
No.
And one thing I was thinking is, okay, Alexandria is really far away. It's in Virginia. Commonwealth is in Ohio. Those are like 420 miles apart.
Yeah, it is in Ohio, right? I said Ohio today, and I was like, that's not right.
That's right. No, yeah, I think it's somewhere a little different in the comic, but close to Ohio. Mm-hmm. But in the show, it's Ohio. And so, but it makes sense because they're building out tracks, train tracks. They're trying to connect communities. So I think they would have a processing center here because it's for the people who are working this far out, you know?
I know, I can totally buy that.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Did you, didn't watch the next episode, did you?
No.
Okay. Me either.
No.
I'm excited to watch it, which is a good feeling.
I screwed myself up the first podcast that we did of this block because I'd already watched the second episode and I was like, never again, because I just get confused. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to be so clear on this. And then I was like, nah, I've fucked up.
Yeah, that's all right. I've done that before too. All right. I got one more point. What about you?
But I guess the last big point for me is the train robbery, which was, but again, I don't have much to say other than it was cool. I liked the way they did it. It was a cool sequence. It was a nice way of having a lot of kind of players quite far apart but all engaged in this kind of combat and secrecy and sneaking people here, there and everywhere, and I really enjoyed it for that. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, let's see, they jammed that switch. I was, you know, the junction switch, basically. I guess that's how you change the track to go a different direction.
I believe so.
I was sort of wondering, what if they didn't need to go a different direction? Then would they have just rolled on through and then they would have been like, duh, damn it.
Yeah. I was a bit confused about that. I was like, okay.
And then the guy comes out to fix it and he clears some walkers. And I like how they use the knife at the end of their gun, like a musket.
Very neat.
To save bullets maybe or cut down on the noise. And then, yeah, they're like just, like I won't go through it detail by detail, but they're just stealthily taking care of each soldier as they can until it turns into this big firefight. And by then they have machine guns because they've taken them from the soldiers. So it's more like, we're not used to seeing our heroes with machine guns.
It seems like a long time we've seen that.
And then then that one had Connie and she whacked him. And then there was the motorcycle chase with Daryl and he slides under a tree and then machete to the head. That was pretty good.
That was shot very Star Wars. I thought it reminded me of the Endor kind of flight scenes. Just the way it was between the trees and things like that. I really liked that. It was cool. Little bike chase. Poor train driver. Not a good job to have in the apocalypse.
I know.
I think my favorite thing was everyone looked really like, oh my God, no, don't do it. But Rosita just looked really pissed off at the end. Everyone else was like, oh, we just watched a guy stab himself in the neck. And Rosita's just like, ugh.
These people.
I'm listening to Carol be like, we'll injure you just a little bit so that they know you got away. I was like, do not trust that woman to just injure you, that she will fuck you up.
Maybe missing a limb.
Yeah, how many limbs do you think you need? Like, on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, what's your least favorite limb?
Yes, there. So I thought the whole train thing was great. As I say, it was hard to kind of note it because it was so visual, but I really enjoyed it and I liked the setup of having the train and seeing them sneak around along the sides under it, that kind of thing. Felt very new and very different because obviously trains are not something we've had a lot of. So a train heist was a welcome departure.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, I'll talk a little bit about the humanity of Commonwealth soldiers and workers. Penny on the instant reaction video which I was not on this week because I was feeling sick, is said that she feels like there's a back and forth about whether we're supposed to think of these soldiers as human beings, you know, complicated to be empathized with, or just definitely faceless bad guys to be killed. Yeah, I think it's kind of true. I mean, I also think when everyone has their guns out shooting at each other, you kind of just have to kill them. And it makes me think of Ukraine right now. We know a lot of those Russian soldiers don't want to be there. But if you're a Ukrainian and they're coming at you in a line, you're going to have to, you know, shoot, as sad as that is. But when you capture one of these guys and you need information, then the situation changes where you can have a chance to see the nuances of what they're all about, whether they agree with their mission or not, you know. And it was interesting, this train driver, maybe engineer, I don't know, is afraid that his family's gonna be killed. Totally understandable, you know.
Yeah, it is.
But what I was confused about is, he's like, there's a map in the train, and then the next scene he's like, I can't do it, or so lying about that or what.
Also, why didn't they just go and get the map? They're like, we're going to have to radio them. I'm like, but he said there was a map in the train. It's like, I don't understand why we're not doing the map in the train. Maybe he was lying. Pass. Maybe they can't read maps.
And then Daryl's trying to get information out of this other soldier that Maggie wounded, this dying guy. Mm-hmm. And he's being nice. I'm going to ask you to please do something good with the time you have left. And the guy won't answer. Which is dumb. If he's feeling so guilty, he would answer. But
just do it.
Yeah, just answer. But then Daryl, it reminded me of Daryl with Randall back on.
Yes, massive barn, right? Season 2 callback, right?
Yeah. He goes, they took our kids from me and I want them back. You hear me? Kick. Pulls out his knife. Yep. This time I fully support it. Like back then, they didn't even know. Like, they were just like, we don't know you. Tell us something.
Tell us who you are.
Yeah, or I'm gonna torture you. Here it was like, hey, you know where my kids are and you're not telling me, so it's a little different. Then Gabriel is there giving him his pep talk, you know, and about what you said, how do you want your story to end. It really reminded me of Gabriel with Robert Patrick guy.
That was a good episode.
Where he's like being really nice, and then as soon as the guy unties him, he kills him. And I'm like, it's a different situation, because there that guy was clearly an asshole and had them tied up. And here this guy is about to die. So, but I still was like, as soon as he gets this information, Gabriel might just kill him.
It felt very like, I'm kind of worried about Gabriel. I'm not going to lie. I'm a bit worried about him, just generally.
Yeah, well.
Surviving the season. I'm just like,
the next episode's title, I won't say it, but makes me think.
It's called The Death of Gabriel. It's called R.I.P. Gabriel. Then the one after that is called Gabriel's Funeral. And then the one after that is called He's Really, Really Gone, Y'all. And that's the end. I liked watching him interact with the guy. That was interesting.
He pulled out his Bible and then he said, excuse me, can you excuse us? And we didn't see what happened next, but I think he bludgeoned the guy with the Bible. Bonk, bonk.
And then peed on him.
That's probably what happened, right? Okay, what happened next? No.
Definitely.
We should pay homage, because Gabriel sat there and comforted the guy in his last dying moments. Like a real...
It was his superpower. Gabriel's preacher. Come into his own a little bit. He's a preacher, but he is also a badass. Yeah. And I liked seeing him and Rosita take down the walker at the very start. And I liked watching him put himself out there for Rosita to kind of, you know, give her space and time and to not get bit. I was a big fan of Gabriel in this episode, and that scene in particular, with the guy who was dying and Gabriel saying that he'd recognized him. And I also felt that his scene with Rosita at the start was very, very good, where they were talking about, well, they said they'd been better and been worse, which was kind of like summed up their kind of perspectives on the world, pessimist and optimist. They kind of paid tribute to their relationship history a little bit. Dislocated arm was so painful to watch, but they got it fixed. But seeing Gabriel kind of talk her down and say, you know, get a hold of yourself, you know.
What do you tell me when I beat myself up? Quit bitching and move forward.
Quit bitching and move forward. Okay. And I loved that. So I really appreciated seeing them both. And I appreciated Gabriel more than I'd realized. He's a grower, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I like them together. I mean, I know they're not together, but I always thought they had great chemistry way back mm-hmm. when she went to talk to him because she wanted to try to kill Negan and just, yeah. Since we're talking about them, she wants to follow this convoy and Gabriel's resisting and she's like, you have a better idea? And okay, so they start walking and then she's like, let's split up and we'll cover more ground. I'm like, you just said you were going to follow the convoy. The convoy, you know which way it went. How are you going to split up? You're just
right
down the road towards the convoy.
We are going in a straight line.
And then
she's not thinking right. They've got Coco.
And then this whole, then the zombie shows up and I get your point, but man, you think by this time you can't be.
I know.
And then her arm is like dislocated. And to me, that's just Lethal Weapon light. Like that's what Mel Gibson's character in had his arm and then he had to pop it back in and so I don't know, it just seems like a trope to me. I could have done without that whole bit. Well, no, I like seeing them together, but the zombie attack I thought was ridiculous.
Agree to disagree.
That's okay, fine. All right, how about some notes?
Getting shivved in the armpit, which I think Maggie did to that stormtrooper, didn't seem like a good way to go. That gave me the yicks. I was like, oh, no, thank you.
I know. What the hell?
It was lovely to see Connie. I love Lauren Ridloff in a scene. She always acts her heart out.
Yes.
The music, when we realized it was Alexandria, was very mega and very like, brrr, which I enjoyed. And Maggie's speech at the end about, she's underestimated us from day one. We're going to get our kids, take back our home and make it right. And Pamela's never going to see it coming. I'm like, that's a Rick speech and I love it.
Yeah, right. Totally is. Yeah.
And I guess, what do you think Designation 2 is?
That's, I don't know. So let's give context. The radio, Carol and Daryl are standing hopefully far enough away because they're just standing kind of out in the open behind this really skinny tree with their binoculars looking at these soldiers.
I was a bit like, these soldiers are so bad at their jobs, like so
look
bad.
Look over and see them a few yards away.
Hi. Hey. Hello, hi, Connie. It's my girlfriend.
Anyway, they say, soldiers are talking to each other. Guy's saying I have to put an exile on here, which means Connie, putting her on the train. It's a cargo transport and against regs. Over. It's been cleared from up on high. She's not going to be a worker. She's Designation 2. Oh, shit. Yeah, exactly. Get her there safely. Copy that. But then the other soldier that Daryl was about to torture said, I've only heard rumors about Designation 2. They're taken somewhere far away. They're never seen again. We know Connie was probably considered a really like enemy number one type of person, right? Mm-hmm. Worse than just the other exiles.
Yes.
So, fuck, I don't know.
I think this is my theory. Mm-hmm. Spoilers for World Beyond. I think they're getting taken to the Civic Republic for experimentation.
Oh.
Like we saw with
like an A and a B
characters. Yeah. Because I think Connie would be interesting, one, because she's public enemy number one, and two, I guess because she's deaf, they might be interested to see that in an experimental mm-hmm. situation, which is rough and gross, but would fit in with some of the kind of symbolism of sending people away in camps if they don't fit into the regular able-bodied
I like
sort
this
of sphere.
Because, you know, Jadis was always saying, okay, he's actually an A, and talking about Gabriel as a B or an A. And I think we decided that one of those, an A or a B, is someone who could work for the Commonwealth, and the other one is someone who needs to be experimented on. And that's basically ends in death for all those people. So maybe by saying Designation 2, that's a way to say that without tipping their hand too mm-hmm. much. And we're now spoiling it for everyone, but oh well, sorry. Yeah. We're not sure. That's right. We're
not 100%, but that would be my guess. That's my speculation. What it is. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Okay. My turn for notes.
Yes.
So when Gabriel and Maggie and Rosita for some reason are in this truck, and I guess the soldier fell asleep, so they got lucky. I mean, right?
I will say this. I can, if I'm not driving, I can be in a car for maybe 10 minutes before I fall asleep. Right. So I'm not going to hate on him too much, but I would say if you are in that job, you might want to consider how long you're able to stay awake in the back of a van.
Yeah.
Because it is a bit of a job hazard if you're just going to fall asleep.
Yeah. If you are regularly going to be asked to sit in the back of a truck with people who would like to kill you,
on a 4-hour drive.
One of the interview questions should be if you're awake and aware on drives.
Yeah. One of your tests is we're just going to drive you around a little, because I would fail. I'd just be like, nah, within like 2 seconds. But yeah, this dude seems fine. All right.
And then so they get free and everything, and the soldier, Rosita and Gabriel jumped off, but then before Maggie could, he grabbed her and there was gunfire and the driver gets shot in the head. And
that was awesome.
But I thought, because then they crashed into a tree, the camera really lingered on his facial injuries a lot, where yes, it started to feel like Glenn getting hit in the eyeball. Like, wow, the special effects guys are so proud of this. They just want to show off their work here. It's a bit gratuitous. Whatever.
It's breaking everyone's heart, but can we just focus in on that just a little bit more? A little bit more. It's just really good.
Bloody meat in there. Yeah. But okay, it's fine. It's Walking Dead. I loved the cute interaction with Daryl and Connie, where he says, I thought I wasn't going to see you again. And she goes, I'm not going anywhere. And then he chuckled and smiled. And it looks so weird because we never see Daryl smile.
She's one of the only, I don't think even Leah made him smile the way that Connie does, which is just lovely.
Yeah. Leah didn't make anyone smile.
No, Leah just made us all fucking miserable.
But a little smile and a chuckle from Daryl is a big deal. If you can do that, there's something going on there. We thought they definitely abandoned that, and maybe they did, but it was still nice to see that little connection.
Oh, it's back, I think.
And last, I was just thinking, okay, Max, this is what you set in motion here. Your boyfriend's friends are in forced labor camp. You know, this is like, these things have repercussions, but ultimately it will probably lead to what Max wanted, which is removing Pamela Milton from power and reforming the Commonwealth, right? There may be a few sacrifices along the way, though.
That is the thing. I just don't believe we're going to get out completely unscathed. So I'm wondering who we're...
I guess I said the opposite last week, but I guess if we end this and no one dies, I might feel like, oh, I guess the stakes are pretty low, huh?
Yeah.
Seems like at least one person should die.
Everyone lived.
Boring.
Boring. They already took my love from me. They took the Glenn to my Maggie, so I have no feelings left.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone can die. I'm broken on the
inside.
Well,
Glenn was my
Lance, my prince.
I'm trying to think who was I most bummed about losing, and I don't know if it counts, but it's Rick.
Yeah.
But then I was also pretty fascinated to see how the show was without him, which in some ways was better.
I was bummed about Carl in principle.
Yeah.
In reality, it wasn't so bad, but I felt like sour about that whole thing. I didn't think that
I still do. And I think even though Chandler Riggs was sort of uneven in his acting, he had his moments for sure. And I think, you know, it would have been better to have him go on.
I think so. I really do. But if you're listening, Chandler, I hope you're not because we just slide off your acting, but we do love you.
I wish you were still on the show. All right. Yeah. Let's take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying,
ah. Obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
So, Insider.com talked with Kari Payton about this episode.
Ooh.
Who plays Ezekiel. They said, "You have the mic drop moment of the episode. We learn Negan wants to work together to get out of this horrible labor camp, and Ezekiel does not mince words with him. Was it satisfying for you to be the character who calls Negan out on, and excuse my language, his shit, as he called it?" He goes, "Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Jeff knows this about me. I've always been in camp. Fuck Negan. Screw that guy. I've always been there no matter how I feel about Jeff. I remember when I had these shirts printed, never bring a bat to a cat fight."
Dean Morgan. I was like, who the fuck is Jeff? And I was like, oh, right. Sorry, I'm done.
We sold, he says he has these shirts, never bring a bat to a cat fight. We sold a bunch of those shirts for charity and he hated those fucking things. And I just loved it because I was like, yeah, man, I love you, Jeff, but fuck that guy. I don't care how long it's been. He needs to be reminded of everything he's done. The fact that you're incredibly charismatic and shit means nothing to me. I've always been on Team Screw Negan. It makes me very happy to sit there, especially because I actually love working with Jeff. Jeff is, especially when it's cold and nasty out. He's Mr. Pumpkin Spice Latte. Fucking can't take the cold. He's like, fuck this man. And I love giving it to him. I'm like, you can't take it? Come on, boy. What's wrong with you? Honestly, that's just our relationship. We bond over our kids and talk shit when it comes to football. We still have a fantasy league that we literally, he's fucking texting me a couple of moments ago about this stuff. We just have a good time together. I'm so glad to be the one who called Negan out. It should have always been me.
Excellent.
They say,
own it.
Yeah. I mean, I remembered it wasn't in 2019. I did a convention earlier this year in Atlanta for a different convention company. And it was Pandemic Dead, right? Pandemic Dead. And I heard him saying that on stage. So I went backstage and I was like, right on, man.
Yeah, man. Amazing.
He said, they go, was that line of dialogue about coercing women into marrying you? Did that come up organically or was that a suggestion from you or Jeffrey about acknowledging the harem? He says, I think it was a suggestion from the female writers in our writers' room. People just kind of forgot about it, but that's a big fucking deal. And I think it's a big deal that Ezekiel said something because men need to speak up for women in these situations because we all know women who have dealt with harassment because every woman has. Every woman has. Mm-hmm. And it's a lonely place to be. I know that it's so, so important because I've been lucky enough to know women who have said, thank you for saying something. Here's the thing. Guys are idiots. We all are. We've all made the mistake of thinking that we're being cute or funny or something. And it can take a woman, it can make a woman feel so small. Hopefully at some point in our lives, we've understood the ramifications of those things and said something or not said something or just shut the fuck up. Sometimes I think it's important and that Ezekiel is the right guy to kind of say that. It's kind of what you were saying.
Yeah. Love it.
They said it's nice the harem wasn't forgotten on this episode because it doesn't seem like we're going to see Dwight or Sherry returning on these final episodes to confront Negan.
Do not tempt fate.
He says, right. I mean, I would like to see that because I know, the whole thing about the harem, Sherry's the kind of poster girl who she just spent a couple episodes of fear just wanting to go back and kill Negan, you know, so and Dwight has his face ironed. So that would be the couple to
very true.
They said, and we've seen on Fear, and just mentioned this, that that's something that's still very present on Sherry's mind. Absolutely. That's a big deal. He says, both of the women that I've spoken to on this junket took a moment to be like, what about this right here? I think that's a testament to the fact that Angela Kang has been put in charge and that Angela Kang, when she took over The Walking Dead, the women in the writing positions and directing positions just blew up exponentially on this show. That's not lost on me that a woman's perspective is highlighting something like that.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, man. I'm glad that it happened on the episode and then that he talked about it even more in this interview. It's good.
Yeah, very much.
So they talked about a couple other things. They said, is there anything you took home from the set from your time on the show? Yeah, I took my sword. I called him Captain Jack Sparrow. I didn't even ask. It was my last day. I grabbed it. I jumped in the car and left. If anybody wants it, they know where to find me, but good luck. And last, they said, looking back at your time on the show, is there anything you wish you were able to do with Ezekiel on The Walking Dead that you weren't able to do? Are there any relationships that you wish were further explored, or are you satisfied with your character's journey? He says, no, I'm not satisfied at all. I wish that there are so many places and situations that I would have loved to explore. But that's one of the things that happens when you have a show that has this many dynamic and interesting characters. 48 minutes or sometimes over an hour long episode just isn't enough. These characters are beautifully constructed. I think the strength of the show is that these characters are nuanced, interesting, and there's so many of them that you just can't get it all in. I'm very sorry to say goodbye to Ezekiel, and I cross my fingers and hope that maybe sometime down the road we could tell the story of how Ezekiel came to be king or something like that.
That would be fun. I would watch that.
Yeah, why not?
He's very honest. I remember him calling out about Lauren Cohen's pay rise as well when that was ongoing a few years ago, saying, pay the woman. So I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. He's a good guy. He is a good guy behind the scenes too. All right. From self.com interviewed Danai Gurira, and it was about a lot of things, but there were a few new pieces of information about the Rick Michonne spinoff, which are that it's set to begin shooting in January. So that's just a couple months away. Yeah. She describes it as an epic love story tale. I think we might've heard that before, but she is a co-creator along with Scott Gimple. She's helping to write it.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yes.
And she's a playwright, so she's a writer. Potentially bad news. She calls it a prestige miniseries.
Okay. So it's one season.
Yeah, I mean, there have been articles over the last few months that said it was directly said it was going to be an ongoing series, but it sounds like maybe that was wrong and it's just going to be six episodes and done.
Or maybe they're seeing how it's received. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, if they like don't write a definitive ending and then go, well, no one watched. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. My sense is it is a limited series because that's what they were talking about at first. But then some people, I don't know where they got the information, but articles were just saying, no, it's an ongoing series. So I still don't know for sure. I could have sworn that Scott Gimple actually said that at some point.
Oh, but we cannot trust Gimple, can we? He's like, liar. Nothing Gimple says. Gimple lies, Smeagol. Gimple lies.
So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if it's just a miniseries, I guess that'll be okay. But then I wish
if they do it well, I'm all in. But it just depends.
I'm all in no matter what. But I just was kind of set for an ongoing, and now they're talking miniseries. All right, that is our show, episode 487. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
That was awesome.
If you want to write in or leave us a message, you know, for this episode, if you get it in within the next day or so, you can be on our next feedback one. You can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
Yay! While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows. I think we've got a couple of new ones have started, right?
Yeah, so have I talked about this one much? Mike Flanagan's Midnight Club is being covered on Strange Indeed by Rima and Paik.
Excellent.
They cover Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, and now Midnight Club. And it's good. I like his stuff. They're great. Yeah. Rima and Paik are great.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Next episode will be listener feedback for this season 11, episode 21, Outpost 22. I also want to mention this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Tara Chadwick, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCapacity. So thank you, Tara. One of the things we do for anyone that pledges, we have a call-in show every month, almost every month. I missed a month this year, but pretty much every month. This last one was about a week ago. We got a bunch of us together for October and talked about our favorite scary movies, and everybody brought up one or two and talked about them, and that was pretty cool. What's yours?
Oh, my favorite scary movie. Like my favorite or the one I found scariest?
It was interesting because a lot of people were talking about ones they found scary, but I kind of just meant favorite horror movie to watch.
Oh, favorite horror movie to watch. Really good question. Trying to think off the top of my head. Oh, there's so many to choose from.
What comes into your head first?
Something like The Omen, probably.
You know what? Like that's a gap. I've never seen it.
Never seen The Omen? Yeah. Oh, man.
You
should watch it. Oh, man. The Omen. Sorry, I didn't enjoy that joke. Original Halloween, good. Most recent Halloween, did not enjoy.
I'm not going to bother watching it.
No, don't. It's a real letdown. The movie I found scariest was Zodiac. I still can't
watch that film.
I find it really scary. If things are real, I find it
Jake
much
Gyllenhaal?
Scarier. Yeah, he's very scary. No, it's just, the whole Zodiac thing freaks me out. So.
I should mention, since you mentioned Halloween Ends, that Paik and Daphne's one of my Handmaid's Tale co-hosts. They have a podcast called Run for Your Lives, where they talk about horror movies and monster movies and disaster movies. And they just covered Halloween Ends. And I'm not going to watch Halloween Ends, but I'm going to listen to their podcast because they're great. And I think they hate it.
Yeah. I'm interested to listen.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Barbie Allen.